Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Great song. Diddly diddly do. Isn't there a rejoin of Hawk doing that to this song?
Yes.
I think it's on Open.
Mm.
One of the Opens has that.
No,
I'm playing this because today is Terry Crews' birthday.
Mm. It is Terry Crews' birthday.
Hey.
I can do the same thing with my pecs that he can.
The bouncy. I know how to bounce my pecs. I don't have enough pec to bounce, though. You just wiggled your shoulders.
That's not what he does? His muscles have muscles.
Yeah, he's a big old fella.
Appel and Crowder here today with Jimmy and Dan Day. No Hawk, no Solana. Hawk will be back tomorrow. I think he's been bird watching the last few days, trying to find a blue jay or two. Or a parakeet, something like that. If there's anything I know about Hawk, it's that he's a big-time bird watcher.
Yeah, he has some weird vacations, man.
Not as I know Witty has talked about going to see the leaves in Vermont, which, I mean, sounds nice in theory, but, like, it's leaves, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody needs to... that goes, look at leaves. Look at a picture on Google.
Hey, man, this is extreme, but these pyramids in Egypt.
Where are we going here?
After about 10 minutes, you're looking at a pyramid, and it's kind of like, yeah. Okay, so I just spent $4,000, and they're a bunch of big-ass rocks.
Someone who is not going to be able to do some bird watching for a long while, or a lot while, some might say. It just broke about a half hour ago. Gilbert Arenas arrested by the feds in a connection with illegal high-stakes poker games that were being held at a property that he owns.
I don't know the numbers of what high stakes is, but it's kind of crazy that you can't sit in your house and play cards against your boys if the guys are all millionaires and they have $100,000 on the table. In the past, people got in trouble for this, but I have a deck of cards. You have $1 million. I have $1 million. We can both have $100,000. Like, what's the big deal?
So here's what he is being charged with in the federal indictment. One count of conspiracy to operate an illegal gambling business, one count of operating an illegal gambling business, and one count of making false statements to federal investigators. According to the Justice Department, Arenas rented out an Encino, California mansion to host illegal poker games. If convicted, he faces up to 5 years in prison on each charge. According to the indictment, Arenas directed a gentleman by the name of Arthur Katz to stage the games. He would then prepare the home, collect rent from the other individuals accused of being involved in the scheme, including one who was suspected of organized crime in Israel. There were a few more names that would manage illegal gambling being done at the home. All other defendants face one count of conspiracy to operate an illegal gambling business and one count of operating an illegal gambling business. I think there were also collecting money off each prize pot, inviting people to play in the games, hiring young women to serve drinks, provide massages, and offer companionship to the people playing the games, and then collecting a portion of what the women earned from their work. So I think that might have been where the...
That's the problem. It's not the gambling. It's the gambling as a business that he's doing. He's taking a vig. He's taking a little cut.
Okay, I get you now. Because that was my thing. Like... we've had some hellified Uno games at my house with me and my buddies. we put up $500 a team. That's a $1,000 pot. but I'm not taking a vig off top of the pot.
Right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying now.
A little different than the poker game between teammates on a flight after after a game. Little different.
I've seen dudes lose. I just saw Lance Schulters. He's coaching with the Falcons. Remember Lance Schulters, the safety? Course.
Yeah. We were talking about Wilkins, and Schulters had done something in the locker room, jumping over people or something like that. We were just talking about him.
Yeah, and they weren't dealing with Lance's foolishness, his little Brooklyn accent. But I remember my rookie year watching. It's the most money to that point in my life I've ever seen in cash. But I watched Lance Schulters walk into the locker room with $70,000 cash and pay off his debts from the plane ride the night before coming home on a Sunday night. On Monday at practice, and I was like, damn, Lance, how much? He's like, man, I lost 70 racks last night. See, I'm like, goodness gracious, but that's not illegal. Oh. Now you get into the bartenders and the vig and the rental homes. And so, yeah, you're running a business off of it. Now I understand it.
I'm not going to sit here and try and get in the head of Gilbert Arenas because it seems to be a fruitless effort, but the man threw away the end of his NBA career because he brought a gun into a locker room. I'm pretty sure he was in negotiations to be part of NBC's NBA package. And then he goes and pulls this. All-time bag thrower awayer, this Gilbert Arenas.
Well, you got to put Shannon Sharp in there too, because ESPN just fired him and he was up to make $100 million.
I bet you whatever he was making from there ended up going into that settlement that he had.
Goodness gracious. Listen, it's some... you know what? I've said this before on the show. There's an idiot born every minute. That's what I tell my kids, because I don't want to call somebody stupid. But they'll sit around and be like, hey, Daddy, did you see what this person did and that person did? And my answer to them, and instead of going into it, I say, Ava Chan, there's an idiot born every minute. And that's my dad. You know, and Josh, you got a baby on the way, so you can steal this from me. There's an idiot born every minute. There's some people out there that they're just not the most intelligent in the world.
Yeah, Channing Appel will be happy to hear that word of wisdom when he's old enough to understand it.
Man, send a little Channing Appel over, man. I got him. I got him. Has to be a year old, Josh. I don't deal with no babies under a year, because then they're just little slimy lizards. They don't. Their eyes can't focus. They just eat all day and poop and sleep. Year old, year old plus.
My entire TikTok algorithm has just turned into baby talk with like 1 year old to like 18 months, and also different videos of parents cleaning up baby blowouts.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going to get some pee on your face. Yeah. But listen, I'm going to give you this advice for free. I won't even charge you for this. You don't have to take little Appel everywhere with you. Leave him with the grandparents. Leave him with the aunties and uncles. How far back do you remember, Josh? Do you remember 3 years old?
No.
5 years old? 6 years old? No, yeah. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember past 10, 11 years old. I hate when people take these little one-year-olds on European vacations. They're not going to remember a damn thing. You're wasting money on a seat. You're wasting money. You're wasting energy trying to wake up with this damn baby. Whenever you're comfortable leaving the baby with grandparents, you and Myra go off and enjoy yourself, and that baby's not going to miss a damn thing, because he's not going to remember anything that happens on that trip.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
How long until babies are self-sufficient?
2, 3.
Ooh, you can leave them at the house? Damn, Dan. Yeah. You could leave them by themselves at 3.
Got to grow up quick in New Orleans.
I was going to say, how do they do things in Louisiana?
Got to grow up quick.
We can. Chan's 13, Ava's 12, Chaz is 5. Probably a couple years ago, maybe Chan was like 11, 10. We could leave him home for like an hour and go to the grocery store, and they, you know, they sit and kind of maintain each other. But yeah, you can't just like cut them loose in the world at three, man. Like, 3-year old getting on the bus with a bus pass.
Yeah,
catching the subway.
Man,
I'm
head to Griffin University. Yeah, I don't know if that's gonna work.
Listen, my kid's not gonna be one of those spoon fed silver spoon when he's older, spoiled. He's gonna learn the hard way right away, right out of the womb. Honestly,
yeah, send him to Uncle Chan's house. It's called the Ferber technique.
What's that?
It's when you got to let them deal with their emotions.
Mm.
So they get up at 3 a.m. and you got to wait till they're about 18 months, but they get up at 3 a.m. and they're overwhelmed with emotion. Just let them cry it out. So they just sit and scream in their room. You turn the monitor down. You can see the red light lighting up that they're screaming. They'll cry themselves to sleep. Ferber method.
That might be what a lot of Dolphins fans are feeling when they watch the secondary, if they don't add anybody to it. After Storm Duck might get some reactions out of people that the Ferber method might be necessary.
Got a Ferber. I learned Ferber off of Meet the Fockers.
Ah, great film.
They were Ferberizing the kid and the parents didn't understand Ferberization.
Did you clap at the end of that movie?
I'm not clapping at the end of any movie, Josh.
Good. Good. I was testing you.
It's ridiculous.
The worst.
Yeah. The movies that you brought up earlier, the flights, clapping on a plane. Shut up. I still try to get my little sleep in once we land, because if we're gonna taxi for 25 minutes, I can sleep for 22 minutes.
Mm. Good shout. Speaking of good shouts, we just had Cam Wolf in the 3 o'clock hour talking some Dolphins, some other NFL stories, and we'll have Craig Mish join us in the next segment, talk some Marlins, some trade deadline, and everything else going around Major League Baseball. But Crowder, I want to read you the stock up, stock down report today from the Miami Herald and our good friend Omar Kelly. Again, as we established over the last couple of days, everybody loves a good stock up, stock down report. So we'll do this quickly, and then we'll get our headlines, and then we'll talk to Craig Mish. So according to Omar Kelly, top performers, and this is a really good sign for the Dolphins offense, if this is to be extrapolated into hopefully this kind of performance in games. Patrick Paul had a monster day in padded practice. Another one. The Dolphins 2024 second round pick won every rep of one-on-one for two practice periods over 20 minutes, and then went on the field and locked down the left side of Miami's offensive line. Once Paul has a player block, the play is seemingly over because it's hard to get around him and nobody is powering through his 6'7", 326-pound frame to the quarterback. Patrick Paul seems like he's having a phenomenal training camp, and he is the heir apparent to Teron Armstead, who also on Twitter today was gassing up Patrick Paul as well. I think Armstead is still involved a little bit with the team, and he thinks that this Patrick Paul has a huge ceiling, and man, that would be huge for the Dolphin. Literally huge.
Yeah.
6'7", maybe, some might say. If he can lock down that spot.
for Patrick Paul to step in and replace the Teron Armstead would be big for the left guard, Savion Aneu, whatever his name is, Jonah. The guy that they, Savion Noah, for him to be on that left side, for them to be able to run the ball. And also, honestly, to his lefty, Austin Jackson as well. If we can solidify that line, they brought in Brewer at center. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
they're I think you brought this up earlier this week where you're talking about they've done a lot with this O-line. If this O-line can solidify, it's going to make things a lot easier for Tua. And what we need to think about is this damn power run game so we can go out there and get us a yard when we need a yard. But for this O-line, for an O-lineman to be on the stock up, I like that.
There's another of the other couple of top performers, according to Omar Kelly, pass rusher Grayson Murphy. He's been the most impressive undrafted rookies. He was one of the most impressive undrafted rookies last year, suffered a knee injury in the preseason that kept him out of action all year on IR. He's had a good camp as well. And then D. Eskridge caught a touchdown on deep ball today from Zach Wilson. And then those were the top performers, as long as we're keeping track of this. Now we get into our stock up and stock down from Omar Kelly. This is someone who we talked about yesterday as well, Willie Gay. He's been one of the training camp's top performers, about one impactful play per day, according to Omar Kelly, produced a sack in today's practice and also nearly had an interception of Quinn Ewers. I guess the one negative is that it's his third dropped interception of training camp so far. He is the stock up from Omar Kelly today. It just feels like the front seven is really good and really deep, and they are as deep as they are at those positions, as thin at defensive back. Mm-hmm. And that just, you heard Cam Wolf say it's the least talented Dolphins roster that he's seen on paper under Mike McDaniel.
Dotson, was it Gay and Brooks,
yeah,
the linebackers. The front four is solid. Sealer, Grant, the young boy, Phillips, Chubb, Chop. The front four is good. The linebackers, now I'm hearing a lot of positive things about them. Like you said, I can watch a linebacker play one series and see if he can really play, if he can run, if he can move, you know, if his hips, if he can open up. But that secondary, man, so we better get a lot of pressure. Anthony Weaver better blitz his ass off so that Cam Smith is not covering all-pro receiver for too long in this defense. But it's great to hear. It is great to hear, because we haven't had a dominant linebacker here in a while.
And then our stock down. Take a guess, Crowder.
Julian Hill.
Bingo.
He might as well burn his cleats. Melt your cleats. I had a defensive coordinator used to tell players that. Bro, you might as well just melt your cleats, because you will never play on my defense. He needs to melt his cleats.
Well, guess what? I don't think anything's stopping him from playing on this offense. They are hell-bent on making Julian Hill a thing. We talked about it earlier. He dropped a touchdown for Tua Tagovailoa today. He's had a quiet training camp. They're also very thin at tight end. They did host Noah Fant for a visit this week as well. I don't know if anything came from that. We haven't seen any follow-up reports, but yeah. And then there are some injury updates from here. And the first one of them is Kader Kohou. But the first, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 bullet points under the injury list from this recap, all defensive backs.
Yeah, Chris Greer, get on the phone. Get on the fax, text. I don't know what you got to do. Reach out to some humans. We need some cornerbacks in here.
Cam Wolf said that it wouldn't be surprising to him if they signed one of the three veterans that are available, Stephon Gilmore, Asante Samuel Jr., or Rasul Douglas. It got me thinking, if they can, bring in all three. Can it be worse?
Sign everybody.
Just sign everybody. One of them's got to be okay.
Yeah. I like Lazant. I'm friends with Asante Samuel Sr. I like Lazant. He can play. And Stephon Gilmore would be great for the room, but yeah, he's old. Hell, I played with him. He he might be 46 years old. I don't know if he can run anymore.
Well, it's Herma Storm Duck, so take your pick.
Never mind. I'll take Stephon Gilmore. To that question, if you want me to answer it, I'm taking Stephon Gilmore.
Let's get our headlines here quickly in the 4 o'clock hour before Craig Mish joins us in the next segment.
When I think about Anthony Weaver, Sin in the House, that's Crowder back in the day. Remember, you were a defensive coordinator? Sin in the House.
Yeah. No safeties, Josh. Zero. Cover zero every play. They knew it was coming. Hey, man, beat him home. I was sitting in the house.
Anthony Weaver taking Crowder's book. You got how many plays you got in that playbook? I got send the house. That's it.
Man, I kept my play call on a note card. I didn't need no hole for you to paper. Listen, blitz 2, blitz 3, blitz 4. Go get him. Cover 0.
Headlines are brought to you by Doral Kia. Choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at Doral Kia. Enter Miami, they have a Leagues Cup game tonight, 7:30 against Mexico's Atlas. Maybe more importantly, tonight, 7:45, it's Marlins Cardinals. Sandy Alcantara coming off a very good pitching outing, 5 innings, allowing no runs, 3 hits, and striking out 4.
Marlins hoping to win another series tonight, get back to 3 games under 500. I think it would be their 5th straight series win if they take tonight's rubber match.
Excited about the deadline tomorrow when the show ends at 6 o'clock?
Yeah, I mean, it'll go up right until the deadline tomorrow. I bet the Marlins have a lot of pieces, whether it's Sandy, whether it's Edward Cabrera, Cal Quantrill. They've got bullpen guys. Jesus Sanchez reportedly available. I mean, the Marlins could be wheeling and dealing tomorrow. We'll talk to Craig Mish about it.
Remember, we were on the air for the NHL trade deadline. It's you and
I'll never forget that.
Yeah. We couldn't believe it.
I was paralyzed from the show for like 15 minutes trying to figure out what Brad Marchand was going to do.
Just me and Dan talking, I think. Marchand!
It was you and Dan Day talking and me going, how did this happen?
Is this real? No, this isn't real. Wait a second. No, it's past the deadline. We just had guests on.
2 full hours of that.
Who did we have on that literally we hung up with him at, and then the trade was made a minute afterwards? Was it George Richards?
Had to have been George.
Yeah, it was George Richards. Yeah. Like, pretty much wrapping up shop, man. That's, you know, like 2 minutes before the deadline's over. Hangs up. Brad Marchand comes over. He's like, whoa.
Good stuff.
Oh, the Miami Hurricanes did their media day for football today over in Coral Gables. They start practice early tomorrow. Also, safety Ashton Davis, he did hobble off the field yesterday. Don't know how active he was today, but he was seen wearing crutches and walking boots yesterday in the Dolphins practice, of course, again tomorrow. Hopefully no injuries, especially to the secondary. We might not have people left if we get more injuries to the secondary.
And we got the Hall of Fame game tomorrow, don't we?
Jimmy.
Yes. Thursday.
Yeah, correct. Tomorrow.
A little OG. Little Aronde Gasson is playing tomorrow.
I think Aronde is going to cry. And also, what? It's the preseason. He's talking about maybe he'll get in on special teams. It's the preseason, OG.
You heard what I told him? Yeah. Listen, little OG is about to get 70 snaps tomorrow. It's the preseason and you're a fifth-round pick? Well, you about to be in that game all day. I think I played 100-and-something snaps in that Hall of Fame game I played in 05.
And didn't Aronde say that with him, Harbaugh doesn't believe in putting juniors and seconds and seniors on the back of jerseys, so you're just going to see Gadsden?
Gadsden, yeah.
That's weird.
You can't tell me my name.
Yeah. Jim. I don't get that. I don't know how much I like that. I don't know if I'd like that.
Who has it better than us? Nobody.
Love that sack.
Man, it's a little cute.
On the weather, it is very hot outside, and it's not really a chance of rain throughout the day, but tomorrow you could possibly start seeing some drizzling here in South Florida.
Craig Mish will join us in the next segment. Thank you, Dan Day, for our headlines here in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll talk some Marlins. We'll talk some trade deadline in Major League Baseball coming up next on Hawk, Crowder, and Solana.
You're listening to the Hawk, Crowder, and Solana Show.
Somebody has dubbed me on the text machine Bad Bet Bunny.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I mean, what a tune, Jimmy. What a tune. The only thing that might – well, there are two songs that probably contend with this one for all-time Marlins anthem, even though this is not a Marlins anthem. It's Marlins Will Soar by Scott Stapp, and then the Pitbull Marlins song. I mean, that trio of songs, all-time. Appel, Crowder, Dan Day, and Jimmy, no Hawk, no Solana today. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is tomorrow. The Marlins will likely be active. So who better to talk to than Craig Mish from Sports Grid and from Marlins broadcast on FanDuel Sports. He joins us on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Cool full circle moment for me, by the way. I used to, as like a 13-year-old, used to text into Craig Mish's radio show on the weekends on 790 way back in the day. And now we're here talking trade deadline and Marlins baseball here at the end of July in 2025. What a time, Mr. Mish.
How old were you when that first song that you just mentioned came on? Everyone's doing the fish. How old were you, Josh?
Oh, when did that song come out? Dan Day, do you know? Craig, do you know?
I'm going to guess you were like 10.
Probably. A great song. Great tune.
And he was harassing your text line.
I would listen to that song, and then I'd switch over to 790 and would text Craig my inane Marlins questions. And that's what we're here to do today, ask Craig some inane Marlins questions. Let's start here. Sandy Alcantara, two great starts in a row, both shutouts, seven innings, five innings, respectively. You know Sandy well. You've covered him for a really long time since he was on the backfield with the Cardinals and, of course, coming over to the Marlins. In your mind, do you think Sandy has pitched his last game as a Marlin?
I mean, look, it's really hard to say because, as you can see, we really haven't had any significant deals. It feels like this is going to go right down to the end. It does feel to me like he is either the best starting pitcher on the market, the second best, or the third, just depending on some of the different variables and metrics that you would look like. And based on the last few trade deadlines with mega deals going down right at the end, it does feel to me that some team is going to want to step up and acquire him. So I think it's trending in that direction, but I would not say it's a guarantee by any stretch, because I do think that Marlins president Peter Bendix, guys, can take this right down to 5:59 p.m. if he wants to. And so it really remains to be seen.
We have a lot to get to as it pertains to the deadline, but if Sandy does indeed get dealt, where does he fit in for you as far as best pitchers to come through this organization? He's the only pitcher to ever win a Cy Young. Obviously, the Marlins have had a great many fantastic starters. I mean, Josh Beckett, of course, Jose Fernandez, just to name a couple, in addition to Sandy, Josh Johnson, a what could have been type player. He dealt with injuries, of course, before the Marlins ended up trading him. But where does Sandy fit in for you organizationally as far as starting pitchers go in his Marlins career?
Yeah, I've thought about that. I think that he's had the best career as any pitcher that's ever pitched for the Marlins. I also think he's had the best season in the history of the Marlins too. Now, as far as like being the best pitcher that's ever pitched for the Marlins, I don't think so. I think that probably would go to Jose Fernandez or maybe Kevin Brown or Josh Beckett. I think those players may end up looking like better pitchers. But as far as careers are concerned, longevity, it goes to Sandy. And I think also in the history of the Marlins, he's had the single best season ever. So two out of three to me ain't bad.
And Craig, you brought up Bendix. And I don't want to say he's Pat Riley yet, because whatever Pat does, we trust, because he's Pat Riley and Pat we trust. But I'm saying, as he gets here and these young guys come up and the Marlins are supposed to have a terrible season and now they're right around 500, like, do you believe in him yet, or you have to see more? And like you just said, we have about 2 hours and to see what he does with this deadline and all. But is he encouraging for Marlins fans out there that we haven't been very competitive and now it seems like we're competitive?
Yeah, I think, Channing, that thus far, I think he's done a good job. I think that's fair to say, because in this sport, and Channing, in all sports, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and hockey, if you're winning more than you're losing on some of these trades and transactions, you're doing a good job. I mean, at the end of the day, we're still dealing with human beings. You don't know what's going to happen with any of them in the end. And so I think personally, if you looked at his like win percentage as far as making trades and transactions, he's well above 50%. And in this sport, that's doing pretty good. So it still remains to be seen, because in the end, he's going to have to win games, and there's not going to be any consolation prizes for winning 75 games or 78 games, whatever they end up winning this season. They're going to have to make the playoffs at some point. But I would say so far, so good from what I've seen.
What do you think, Craig, the return for Edward Cabrera might look like? And then follow up to that, the fact that he's even made himself into one of the better controllable starters available at the deadline is something in itself. What do you think the biggest reason is, and what are the biggest changes for him that have allowed him to have this stretch that he's been on?
Well, I think the most important thing for him thus far, Josh, is that he's been able to work through some injuries and work through some of these little things that we've seen in the past where, he'll pitch a game, he'll come out, and then we won't see him for a month or two. It does seem to me that he's, you know, kind of learning from injuries and from soreness. I mean, to me, that's a major deal. And then the second part of it is just attacking the zone and not walking the park. I mean, we've seen so many different times where he's pitched in games where one start, he'll pitch 7 innings or 6 innings, strike out 8, and then the next game he's walking 5 guys. We didn't see that this year. So a lot more consistent. I think other teams are taking notice of him as well. And so we'll have to see if he remains a Marlin after tomorrow, too. I think there's a chance that he ends up going along with Sandy. I really don't know if they both will be traded, but I think it's a possibility.
Craig, this recent stretch, the last month and a half or so, do you think it's changed Peter's calculus at the deadline at all as far as how they approach it? Is this going to be more of a soft sell? Are they going to try and add something now that could still help, even though they're offloading some of their players this year? Or is he just steady with whatever plan they had going into the season? They're enjoying this run, but ultimately it's not going to affect what they want to do big picture.
I think last deadline was characterized as a fire sale. It's hard to argue that. They traded Jazz Chisholm. They traded Josh Bell. They traded Brian De La Cruz. You know, before that, they traded Luis Arraez. They traded Chargois. Basically, anybody that was there, they dealt. I would not categorize this deadline as a fire sale. I think that they're going to trade a few players that are going to help them for the future. But, Josh, I don't foresee them adding someone that's going to help them for this year at all. I don't know if that answers your question directly, but I don't think they're acquiring a player that they believe is going to get them to the postseason. Their odds on all of the websites that, you know, project this sort of stuff, and I know it's just projections, but their FanGraphs projections, I still believe, is under 1% or 1%. And so I think they would probably look at that and say it would be best to build for next year in the future.
I thought Crowder was going to ask a question. I guess not. I don't know if he can hear us anymore. There he is.
My computer's breaking up, brother.
All right. Well, you get your computer situation figured out, and I'll ask you another question, man. Craig. Do you envision the Marlins kicking the tires on extension talks with either Kyle Stowers, Yuri Perez, Augustin Ramirez anytime soon? Is that something that's on their radar?
Yeah, I think so. I think I could see that happening. And again, it would have to work for both sides, but to me, if there's one player of those three that you mentioned, would be Yuri Perez. That makes the most sense for me, just because he's still extremely young and, you know, very far from not only free agency, but maybe a second free agency based on a contract that he would sign. Again, it has to work out for both sides. I would guess that Yuri Perez would be looking for, the kind of extension that maybe like a Spencer Strider got, or, you know, some elite pitcher that was young. And then you'd have to remember that he's even younger than Strider too. And so I don't know that the numbers would work out, but I would guess that that would be explored, Josh. Yes. Especially with a guy like Yuri Perez. We'll see.
You brought up Spencer Strider, and I wasn't planning on asking you about the Braves, but what the hell happened there? The Marlins are up a significant chunk of games on them in the standings. Obviously nobody envisioned that. What the hell's happening in Atlanta?
Look, injuries were their issue last year. If you look at the team, Josh, that they brought back from a year ago, they all kind of performed similarly this year, which is a little strange. Like Ozzie Albies, took a major step back, but took a little bit of a step back last year. Michael Harris took a little bit of a step back last year. Same this year. Matt Olson, same. Austin Riley, same. So maybe the Braves probably should have, you know, pivoted a little bit and said, hey, all these performances from last year, we think that we're going to get better ones this year, and they simply did not. On top of that, they have had some bad luck. I mean, the metrics on the Braves say they're a lot better than most of the teams that are in contention for the playoffs. I believe they still had a positive run differential for a really long time throughout the season. My understanding from the way the Braves think is they think that they're going to be very competitive next year, and they're not going to be selling here in the next 24 hours. They could, you know, trade players, Josh, that are on expiring contracts, but I don't see any significant moves coming from them.
And Craig, like you said, we weren't expecting anything out of the Marlins coming up. I don't know if y'all talked about this, you know, while I was trying to – my kids are home for the summer, and they eat up all my Wi-Fi. I had to go tell them to turn their cell phones off, so now I'm back. But
you're on a dial-up?
I don't know what I'm on, but every time they're home, oh, my damn internet is not worth a damn, because they eat up all their playing Grand Theft Auto and all this foolishness. But the surprise of what the Marlins are doing, Are you surprised? You follow it, you know, heavier than we are. I didn't know who Stowers was. I didn't know these guys before, you know, before this season. And now you're seeing all these dudes step up, Gus Bus and all these, you know, young guys step up. Are you surprised? You follow it very close. Are you surprised how much success the Marlins have had all year pretty much? Because they're right there. They're winning series. I watched them beat the hell out of the damn Padres the other day. Like, are you surprised by this?
I mean, I'm more surprised, Channing, that you couldn't find a summer team for your boy playing travel ball. I mean, come on, man. I mean, you know, we got our kids playing baseball 24/7 here, man. But to really, you know, say surprised, I mean, it's more shocked. There's no way that anybody in this industry could have predicted that the Marlins would even have a chance to finish 500 this season, let alone the playoffs. I mean, every projection had them losing over 100 games. So I am stunned. Yes, I did not think they would be this good. Now, we also have to understand that the next 24 hours could change that trajectory once again, depending on who they trade. We have to keep that real and understand that if they do trade two of their starting pitchers and maybe some other players, that they could trend downward again. But I think overall, you got to take a major success story away from the first 100 or so games of the season. I definitely did not think that they would be this competitive.
Craig, how much credit does this new coaching staff get? Because there were a lot of unknowns on the staff itself coming into this season. Clayton McCullough getting his first managerial chance. He was a first base coach for the Dodgers. Obviously, they were very successful. The team there clearly loved him and how they received him when the Marlins went to Los Angeles. But a lot of kind of no-name coaches on this staff. Kyle Stowers has given a ton of credit to the hitting staff for kind of working with him and resetting his career in spring training. How much credit does this staff get for how the team has performed?
I think they get a lot of credit for creating new and different innovative ways to go about their business every day. And the coaching staff and the organization gets credit for that. And then I would say the majority of the players get credit for buying into that. Now, some of them did not. You know, let's be honest. There's players on the team that are veterans that aren't, you know, going to be particularly interested in trying to innovate the game and do things differently because they're used to doing things a certain way. But the younger guys have bought all in, and I think that's a good success story and maybe a projectable success for the future too, if they're willing to, you know, try these different things, like these competitive side sessions that they have with the pitchers and having the hitters in there too, things they tried in spring training. And so, you know, Peter Bendix, you know, certainly gets a lot of credit for that. And I think, you know, even though it's not really at the major league level as much, I think that you got to give Gabe Kapler a lot of credit for that too, because his ideas sometimes come off as a little crazy or maybe something that people aren't used to. But I got to say, I heard about a lot of this stuff before the season, and people in the game would tell me, oh, it's nuts. None of it's going to work. It seems to be working right now for the Marlins.
And go ahead, Carter.
I want to ask you on the whole Bryce Harper thing, Craig, with Bryce Harper just flat out cussed out Manfred. Should we be scared? Because I think baseball right now is in a good place. But now we have this CBA coming at all. Should we be worried about, is there any tea leaves to read when you read that Bryce Harper ended up cussing out Manfred?
Well, I was not happy to hear that. You know, I don't think that you ever want to see one of the faces of the game going toe-to-toe with the commissioner of Major League Baseball. But, you know, for many years, Channing, I've always been a player's guy. You know, I've always, and, you know, you being a player understand this too, I've always been you know, these are the ones that are on TV and these are the ones that are bringing in the money and the players always deserve the credit. You know, I got to tell you, this is going to be the first time, and I've covered sports for 30, 40 years. I'm probably going to go the owner's side on this one because I'm just sorry to say that the way that the NFL works with the salary cap and the way that the NBA has worked and making teams competitive in the NBA like Cleveland and in Indiana and in the NFL, the Green Bay Packers are, you know, playing, you know, in a town of, you know, 200,000 and they're, you know, trying to win Super Bowls every single year. We need that for baseball, Channing. I mean, it's gotten out of control with some of these big markets and I don't know how they fix it. I do think they need a salary cap with a salary floor. And so that will make sure that all of the teams at the bottom are spending and it will stop the teams at the top from you know, giving out these contracts that end in 2075, you know, like something has got to change to have more competitive balance. And I know that's not going to be a popular opinion maybe for some folks, but I do think it is time in baseball to have a cap and a floor. I would like to see that happen.
Last one for you, Craig, here. You've covered a lot of trade deadlines over the years. You've covered baseball for a long time. What's your best trade deadline story in the time that you've been covering it?
It's a great one. That's a great one. Well, with you, I was with you for one of them, right? I was with you for one. I mean, that was pretty good, where Pablo almost got traded to the Yankees and you were sitting next to me and it was like really, really close. You remember that, right?
So Craig and I were sitting together in the tunnel at Lone Depot Park, and this had to have been what, 2022? And
yeah, that was a good one.
Craig literally had the tweet ready to go, was hovering over the tweet button for the Pablo Lopez trade.
I was ready to trade him to the Yankees. Yeah, I was ready to trade him. Yeah.
Didn't happen.
Yeah. I was ready to hit that button, but it didn't happen. And so that didn't happen. You were sitting literally next to me during that. It's hard to remember everyone. I remember last year. So at every trade deadline, so that's tomorrow. So every trade deadline, I'll clear my schedule as much as I can. I'll still host on my TV show on Sports Grid, but I want to make sure that I'm available as much as possible. But the days before, I just live. Like for example, I'm driving right now. Like, whatever, if something happens, I won't be able to break the story. But last year, Jazz got traded while I was at my daughter's show. She was performing in a show, and I was sitting at the show, and I got a text. It was a few days before the deadline. I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And so I just turned to my wife. I remember, I'm like, at this intermission, I got to break the story. The Jazz is getting traded to the Yankees. I remember that at the time. but that happens a lot, though. And I'm sure all of the insiders in the NFL and the NBA go through that, where you can't put the phone down because anything's going to happen. But the trade deadline in particular is one of those where I do have the phone on lock, where I'm ready to go and I'm ready to break stories. But I don't really have a crazy one, unfortunately. I think I just gave you the two that I remember the most.
Craig?
The Stanton, when Stanton got traded, it was in the winter. So that, you know, that was obviously much crazier, Josh. But that was the winter.
Well, hopefully tomorrow isn't as crazy for you and it's a little more straightforward and you have a nice relaxing day as we lead up to the trade deadline at 6 p.m. tomorrow. We'll find out if Sandy is still a Marlin after tomorrow, Edwin Cabrera, and of course a bunch of other names that are available for the Marlins at the trade deadline. Craig Mish of Sports Grid and FanDuel Sports Network joins us. Craig, thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
This is Hawk, Crowder, and Solana.
Is there any possibility that Billy the Marlin is a bird?
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.